Welcome to the infamous podcast, Bitch, I'm Not Well. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Brandy.
And we're invested on taking you down to Crazy Town, where we talk about crazy bitches who are truly unwell. Hello!
Hola!
Hola! Ni habla español! Muy poquito. All right. Today, I am going to share a story about Dr. Amy Bishop.
Ooh, a doctor.
She a doctor. Dr. Amy Bishop was an accomplished, brilliant woman, wife, and mother of four children. And she literally snapped on February the 12th, 2010, killing three and injuring six of her coworkers.
Wow.
Yeah, shadam.
I'm glad I don't work with Amy.
Yeah, we're not smart enough to work with Amy, but...
That's true.
I'm kind of glad at this point.
I'm glad. I was about to say, I'd probably really piss her off with some of my comments I make, so it's right? Probably a good thing.
Yeah. You don't mess around with Dr. Amy. Amy was born to Judy Sanborn Bishop and Sam Bishop on April 24th, 1965. If opposites attract, this was proof. Amy's father, born Satir Papazoglos.
I'm so glad my last name was only three letters when I was in kindergarten. Yeah, right. I'm the smartest kid in the class. I learned my name first.
That's so true. You're so lucky. So her father, we'll call him Satir because I can't say the last name correctly. He was of Greek descent and raised by immigrants in a Greek settlement of Somerville, Massachusetts. Her mother was raised in Exeter, New Hampshire. Judy's grandfather owned a shoe factory there. She was a gregarious young woman with blonde curly hair and an unruly sense of humor.
Oh, we might have got along.
Yes.
Until she killed people.
No, it wasn't her. This is her mom.
Oh, okay. Me and her mom might get along.
Yes. So her dad was a quiet, husky military guy. He joined the Air Force in 1954, and he later changed his name to Sam Bishop. Judy met Sam at the New England School of Art in Boston, Massachusetts. And Judy often liked to say how she chased Sam until he caught her. Cute.
Oh, that is cute.
Isn't that cute? The couple moved to Iowa City, Iowa in 1964, where Sam did graduate work in fine arts at the University of Iowa. Painting during the day, working as a janitor at night. So he was really doing it all.
Dang, that's a lot.
He was getting it. The next year, Amy was born. Amy was described as a bright, deliberate child who arranged her toys in elaborate formations as if they were all on parade.
Oh, cute.
I know. In 1968, Sam got a teaching job in the art department at Northeastern University. So they moved back to Massachusetts, settling in Braintree. No, Braintree.
That sounds like a real smart city. It also sounds like a fake one.
They'd kick me out. They lived in a lovely Victorian-style home built in the 1800s by a dentist who ran his practice from a cottage on the property. Amy, Seth's brother, was born later that year. Judy became involved in the civic life in Braintree. This is her mom. Joining the town meeting, local governing body, and drawing editorial cartoons for the local paper.
Man, so she's all around.
Yeah, like these people are just, they're in it to win it. Judy was noted as the town spokesperson. If anyone had a question, they were calling Judy.
Yo, girl, what up?
Go, Judy, go.
What's for lunch tomorrow?
Pork and beans. Although Braintree was notably a jock town.
Okay, that's the opposite. Of
right?
What I
Braintree,
would
and it's a jock town. No offense to any jocks, but.
To any trees with brains.
Or any trees with brains, really. Yes. You're so right on that. The Bishop family thrived, and they were an integral part of their community. Their family had been described as exotic, even.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Amy was severely asthmatic, so much so that many times she would often find herself in the emergency room.
Oh, man.
She fell in love with science and vowed to find a cure. Amy was described as a loner, and Seth, her brother, was a little shy, but would pull up a chair and talk to you, so he was a little more sociable than she was. They both excelled in school, both played the violin as if it were an extension of themselves.
Dang.
Once in middle school, Seth was being bullied by classmates about him carrying his violin everywhere. So this little sumbitch pulls it out and begins to play. And it was, he played so beautifully that the bullies were shut down in silence.
Dang.
Yeah, like he shut him up with his violin.
I know when I was younger, one of my friends played the flute. And her dad paid her money to stop because she was so bad.
Well, this is not the case.
Please quit practicing in our house.
Please stop. Just, I'll give you a ferret if you stop. So Seth was always the stronger of the two, even though he was the younger brother. He was stronger academically, socially, and talent-wise. Mm. He was the only person who could truly outperform Amy, no matter how hard she tried.
Did that make her mad? Or did she love like little Seth?
I feel like it did. You know, she was the older of the two, and she started to get a complex about it, I think.
Yeah.
Seth was a member of the Boston Youth Symphony and was named the concert master.
Ooh.
That's a pretty big deal.
That is. Is that the person that does the sticks?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
The sticks. The hands.
The hands.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. In high school, he won the National High School Math Award and first place in the Science Award in both categories of chemistry and biology.
Dang.
Now, let's remember that science was Amy's thing. You know, that was like her big deal.
Yeah. Wow. This dude is like...
Yeah, he's on fire.
All around.
He's on fire. Literary Magazine even published some of his short stories, and Amy was known as, sadly, and like this disgusts me, she was known... as the weird girl.
Oh, poor
that's
thing.
Terrible. Isn't that terrible?
That is. Don't
kids
pick
are
on
so
people.
Mean. Amy was finding this hard to live up to, and it ate at her because, like I said, this was her younger brother.
Yeah.
Of course, Seth's life only continued to improve after high school. High school.
High school.
High school. Sorry. Sorry. My sudden accent kicking in. He enrolled at Northeastern University, where his father worked. And Amy was a student there as well. Although Amy was accomplished in her science studies, Seth always outshined her. In an effort to become more social, Amy joined the Dungeons and Dragons Club.
Ooh,
rah. She met a fellow classmate, Jimmy Anderson.
After watching Stranger Things and they play Dungeons and Dragons, yeah. I was like, oh, I'm gonna try. And then I realized it takes hours.
Yeah, it's
and
intense.
After about 10 minutes, I was like, okay, I'm going to go read my book.
Yeah,
y'all have fun.
Intense, very intense. After a year of dating, Jimmy introduced Amy to his family.
Ooh, getting serious.
Getting serious. His mother noted that Amy continued to call Jimmy James. Now, Jimmy was his legal name.
Oh, gosh. That'd be like me calling Chris Christopher.
Yeah. He told her it was Amy's nickname for him. She refused to call him Jimmy because she thought it was a redneck name.
What?
And James sounded more distinguished.
Mm-mm.
No doubt his family didn't like this connotation since Jimmy was named after his father, Jimmy Sr. So you're going to go to your boyfriend of a year and be like, your name is James. It's not Jimmy. That's way too redneck. And your dad's name is Jimmy?
See, I like that they named him Jimmy because most people that are named James, they call him Jimmy.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah.
The same thing with Drew. Everybody's like, oh, was it short for Andrew? I'm like, no, it's just Drew.
Yeah.
And Dex, is it short for Dexter?
Yeah.
No, it's Dex. Like, yeah. This is what I'm going to call him, so I'm going to name them what I'm going to call
gonna
them.
I'm going to name him what I'm going to call him. So, needless to say, Amy didn't really hit it off with Jimmy's family. And to make matters worse, Seth, Amy's brother, was not fond of Jimmy.
Oh.
So it really put a strain on Amy's relationship with her brother.
I bet that made Amy like Jimmy more.
Probably so. Probably made her hate her brother more.
Mm.
Continuing their lives together, Amy decided to start her journey to find a cure for asthma through genetics. And with Jimmy being a biology student, the two partnered up and threw themselves into it. Meanwhile, Seth's life achievements only continued to get better and better.
The hell, this kid's got like the
Seth
golden
ticket.
Seth is
on fire. He purchased a bright red Camaro.
Ooh.
His popularity was increasing. He won first place at the university science fair and second place at the Eastern Massachusetts State Fair.
Dang.
And third place at the state level.
Dang.
Seth wouldn't even mention these awards, but of course his mother, Judy, would find out about them and proudly announce them over breakfast from the morning paper to Amy. Look what your brother did. Look how wonderful he is.
Like, let me ruin your day. Okay, have a great day, honey. Seth is great. We love him. Bye. Yeah.
And I'm sure it wasn't done intentionally or out of like, you know, malice. Like rubbing her nose in it or whatever. But you know that it had to make her feel inept, like not good enough. And she thought that her parents favored Seth over her. Which, if sounds your like parents it. Are constantly bragging about your sibling, then of course.
That's what you're going to think.
Right. One night in 1985, the Bishops came home to discover that their home had been robbed. The typical items were stolen, but they also took treasured keepsakes of the Bishop family, and they were all beside themselves with grief, anger, and distress. The next day, Sam, which is Amy's dad, drove to a nearby town and purchased a 12-gauge shotgun. Mm. Judy and Amy objected to having a gun in the house, but Sam kept it unloaded in his bedroom closet with a box of shells in his dresser. In December 1986, Seth mentioned to his parents that he didn't want anything for Christmas. And Amy had to hear how wonderful Seth was. Seth this, Seth that. Can you believe he doesn't want anything for Christmas? My God, he's an angel.
I'd be like, well, look, since Seth doesn't want anything, whatever you're going to spend on him, add it to mine.
Yeah.
Seth would really like if you bought this for me.
Mm-hmm. On December 6th, 1986, a 21-year-old Amy shot her 18-year-old brother in the chest with the same 12-gauge shotgun that she detested being in the home.
Her mother,
Judy, called 911 frantically, stating that her daughter shot her son, then later stated that it was an accident.
Wow, I was really not expecting that.
Yeah, right? Yeah. You don't want anything for Christmas? Fine. We'll just put you in the ground.
I'll give you a hole in the chest. There you go.
Hole in the chest. According to police statements, Judy left the home before sunrise, and Judy's her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And she did this before everybody was even awake. She drove to Quincy, where she had a horse stabled. She spent the morning exercising the horse and cleaning the stable as she normally did. And she said that she returned to the house around or before 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but she wasn't really sure of the time. Amy told police that her father and brother had left the home earlier that morning, and she was scared to be alone in the house from the robbery incident the prior year. Tell me this is the first time she was alone in a year.
Yeah. And you're 21. Just leave.
So she got the gun and loaded it because she was in fear. Seth had shown her how to load it, but never shown her how to unload it. She loaded several shells and was trying to figure out how to unload it, and the gun accidentally fired, shattering the vanity mirror in her room and blasting a hole in her bedroom wall.
Oh my God. Could you imagine?
Yeah. When she heard Seth come home, she walked downstairs with the gun to ask him to help her unload it.
I can just picture her like on a cartoon walking with the gun pointed.
Yeah. Hey, can you show me how to do this?
Like looking straight down the barrel. How do I get this out?
Yeah.
Like, oh no.
So Judy says that she and Seth were home. They were both in the kitchen. And Judy said, Amy said to me, I have a shell in the gun and I don't know how to unload it. I told Amy not to point the gun at anybody. But as Amy swung the weapon around to show it to her brother, Judy said, the gun fired. In the small kitchen, Amy shot Seth in the chest at point blank.
Oh my God.
When he collapsed to the floor, Judy called 911 and Amy fled the scene.
Well, that's what an innocent person would do.
Yeah. Police picked her up outside an auto body shop and questioned her, but released her to her parents due to her highly emotional state with further investigation to follow. Now, this isn't typically how an investigation involving a shooting would go, but the chief of police made the decision, and so it happened.
Mm-mm.
Neighbors rallied around to clean the Bishop's home before they returned from the police station, which is like, you have an amazing community, you know, like cleaning up all the blood and stuff before they could get back home.
Yeah.
The Bishop family and the community were in disbelief and grief-stricken to have lost such a young, brilliant soul.
Oh, he died. Oh, my gosh.
At Seth's funeral, Amy was described as being in an almost catatonic state, and she slept with her parents for months on end, horrified about what happened. Seth's death was ruled an accident as a result of the accidental discharge of a firearm. This didn't make the horror go away for Amy, and since her father didn't believe in therapy, Amy received none. She had to eat in the same kitchen every day where she shot and killed her brother.
Oh my gosh.
Walked past his bedroom that remained intact every night. Her parents never removed any of his articles or his clothing or his, you know, posters on his wall, nothing. It was like he was still there. She had to relive this in her mind over and over and over again. And surely this was too much for a young woman to carry on her own. She learned to suppress her feelings, still playing second fiddle to her dead brother, Seth.
Dang.
Her parents were in denial of his passing and sank further and further into depression. Oof. Amy continued her schooling at Northeastern and became more determined than ever to earn exemplary grades. She wrote her thesis titled, "The Effect of Temperature on the Recovery of Sea Lamprey from Full Spinal Cord."
Huh?
What?
Say that again. So, that sounds super interesting. I'm probably going to go home and read it.
I might not. So, needless to say, this caught the eye of a Harvard recruiter. After graduating, she enrolled in the PhD program in genetics at Harvard in 1988.
Snazzy
girl. You really caught the eye with that that thesis.
That thesis on spinal cord lampreys.
Girl.
I thought lampreys were like a eel.
Maybe. I don't know.
I know one of the kings of England died from eating too many of them.
Oh, well.
Yeah, because they suck your blood and you're supposedly your body can't digest blood. I don't know. I'm not a doctor today. Maybe tomorrow I'll let you know tomorrow. About that.
Yeah, we'll get back to you on that.
I'm going
to
ask Amy.
Amy and Jimmy were married August the 20th, 1989, at a simple ceremony at the same church where the bishops had held Seth's wake. I don't know if I could have done that.
Yeah.
But maybe it brought a little happiness to a place that still carried, like, all that grief or whatever. But I don't know. I couldn't get married in the same place that my brother was buried, that I shot. Yeah. Or that had a funeral service that I shot my brother.
I don't even like to go to church services at the church that Paul was, his mass was done in.
Right? It's just like, let's just do courthouse.
Yeah, just brings back bad memories. I'm sure there had to be another church somewhere in the vicinity.
You would think. Amy decided to keep her surname of Bishop, as she wanted any notable achievements to be named as Dr. Amy Bishop. She also asked Jimmy to be a house husband.
Oh.
So that he could take care of their eventual children, and that he must continue to call himself James.
Oh, gosh.
Everywhere that Amy went, she would introduce herself as Dr. Amy Bishop Harvard trained.
Right.
What?
Oh, my gosh.
Over the years, the majority of her colleagues found her to be pretentious.
No.
No doubt. No.
I cannot believe they thought that about her. She seems like such a down-to-earth person.
Right.
Real laid back.
Yeah. Harvard trained.
Dr. Brandy Harvard. Rejected.
Harvard never applied.
Never applied.
Dr. Kelly never applied. In 1991, Amy gave birth to a baby girl named Lily. I love that name.
I do, too. I have a cousin. Well, her name's Lillian, but
Lily is so cute. Okay. Anyway, Lily was followed by two more daughters, Thea and Phaedra. Friends describe Amy as a loving but high-strung mother. She gave them only the best foods, encouraged them to play instruments, and worried constantly if they were adequately challenged in school.
Oh, I bet she was obnoxious. Mm. She seems like a mom I wouldn't want to be friends with. Can we go to Dr. Amy Bishop's house, Mom? God, no.
No beanie weenies here.
No beanie weenie.
No beanie weenie.
They call them puppy Peters in Hackberry.
Oh, we call them pygmy Peters.
Pygmy Peters? Okay, that doesn't sound so bad. We didn't call them anything in Jennings. We just said Vienna sausage.
Yeah. No.
Okay.
Have you ever just been so freaking hungry for a Vienna sausage, though?
Yes.
Why?
I don't
and then
know.
You eat it, and it's like, why?
Yeah. Because it always hurts my belly after I eat it.
It's just disgusting. But,
yeah. The ones with barbecue sauce.
But still, I get so freaking hungry for them. I'm like, I got to have a can of Vienna's.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big processed eating person. Like, I just, okay, I don't know.
It's like your body needs it sometimes.
Off the rails. Off the rails. Okay.
Feed me.
Give me the puppy bitten. All right. So sorry about that.
Okay.
Although the PhD program at Harvard was difficult for Amy, she succeeded in finalizing her doctoral dissertation and was awarded her PhD.
Wow.
Yeah. It was said that her dissertation was a scandal at the school.
What?
Because it wasn't good.
What?
And people felt like she never should have received her doctorate.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm.
Amy began a postgraduate research fellowship at the Harvard Medical Center, but her supervisor, Dr. Paul Rosenberg, had been having issues with Amy getting into altercations with her coworkers. Then she got extremely upset with him because he wasn't able to give her doctoral dissertation a positive review.
He didn't like it either?
Not her dissertation.
Oh my God.
On top of that, he gave her a negative evaluation for her work in the lab.
What?
Yeah.
I wonder if one of the sections was plays well with others.
That's one of the sections.
It's like, out of five, zero.
Zero.
Negative.
Yeah, negative. She's in the red. Due to her extreme reaction to the evaluations, Dr. Rosenberg ended up convincing Amy to resign on November 30th, 1993. He later stated that her anger frightened him, and rightfully so. On December 19th, 1993, Dr. Rosenberg and his wife were out of town, but had a person stop by their house to feed their cats. This person found a white cardboard box on the front porch. She picked it up and put it on the kitchen counter for Dr. Rosenberg for whenever they got home, right?
Yeah.
Okay. At this time, however, everyone was like on super high alert due to the Unabomber. Do you remember those days?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
When you were scared to open a package because the Unabomber was just randomly sending these packages out?
Yes.
Yeah, since Dr. Rosenberg wasn't expecting a package, he was very careful opening the box. So he cut a small opening in the center of it without opening it. He could see pipe and wires and called the police. Everyone on the block was evacuated. All of his neighbors had to be evacuated. And the bomb squad disarmed the bomb, which was designed to explode when opened.
Oh my God. So it was a legit bomb.
Legit bomb. Had enough explosives to kill Dr. Rosenberg and his wife.
Oh my gosh.
This bomb was determined not to have come from the Unabomber. And there was no one other than Amy who Dr. Rosenberg had any altercations with. So.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. When the authorities started investigating Amy, they found many of her colleagues were afraid of her.
Can't imagine why. She seems like such a great person.
Right. Or stated that she often accused them of trying to take credit for her work.
Like, bitch, your credit, your stuff's bad. Nobody likes it. Why would I take credit for that?
Yeah, you can't even write a dissertation.
Yeah, people talk shit about you all the time.
All the time. Go home.
Go home.
Go home. A man who grew up with Jimmy told authorities that a few years back, Jimmy was having problems with a neighbor and asked him to help him get a gun.
Wow.
So he helped him purchase a Ruger P85 9mm semi-automatic pistol. He also said that in recent conversations that Jimmy told him he wanted to kill Dr. Rosenberg, whether it was to shoot him, bomb him, stab him, or strangle him. Now, this is Amy's husband.
Jimmy's just as crazy as Amy.
James.
What are you thinking of, James? But his parents are proud.
James failed on the bomb execution.
This is why we didn't attend your wedding.
Right. I don't know if they did or not. Maybe they did. They probably didn't. The experts determined that Jimmy's background in chemistry and engineering would make him more capable of building a package bomb and obtained a search warrant for the cottage house. So Jimmy and Amy were living on her parents. Remember I told you that they bought that,
that
dentist...
Yeah.
That he used to have this little cottage that he did his dentistry. Well, that's where Jimmy and Amy and the kids lived, okay?
I wonder if it still looked like a doctor's office inside. Like they kept the dentist chairs
she
instead of buying
kept the
a
drills.
Couch. It's time to go to bed.
Oh, God. Oof. So, anyway, they got a search warrant to search the cottage. While they were on the Bishop property, the Braintree Police Department sent officers to the scene for security, never mentioning that Amy shot her brother on that property just 7 years earlier.
Oh my gosh.
The box was traced back to Avery Office Products, and they confirmed that the box would have contained five-column accounting tablets. The FBI found those exact same tablets in a desk drawer in Jimmy's office. Mm-hmm. They also found a receipt for an electrical switch from Radio Shack and parts from a hardware store that matched what had been used to build the bomb. But this wasn't enough to charge the couple with the crime.
What? You gotta be kidding me. What more did they need?
For what the F?
James to walk out and been like, yes, I did it.
Yeah.
I can easily do that. The cops should have been like, Amy's not smart enough to do this.
Give me a break.
She would never be able to pull something like this off, and I bet that bitch would come out, yes, I am, I did it, and you weren't even gonna catch me.
Strapped to her chest.
Yes.
So Amy, Jimmy, and the children continued to live in the cottage on Hollis Avenue on her parents' property.
Her parents were real proud.
Yeah, until Sam and Judy sold the house and moved to Ipswich, 35 miles to the north. Sam stated the reason for the sale was, this is Sam, is her dad, right?
Mm-hmm.
He said, too many ghosts. Well,
there's no way I could have lived in that house after that.
No.
That was a really long time that they lived there.
So first, your daughter shoots your son and you live in there and it's like a shrine to him. And then second of all, the police bomb squad are coming to look through a cottage that your daughter is living in. Like,
oh,
she's being accused of making a bomb. I guess so. I'd have moved a lot further than 35 miles north.
Oh, yeah. I'd probably change my name again, too.
Yeah.
And block her number.
Right. Amy continued working in research at various hospitals, but regularly lost her jobs because others, guess what, found it impossible to work with her.
No, she seems like such a lovely person.
I know.
She even sends boxes, and I would assume it's a box with a gift inside of it.
It's a gift.
To old colleagues that fired her.
It's a gift.
What's not to like about her?
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
A lot. In 2001, Amy had a baby boy who was born on what would have been her brother's 33rd birthday.
Mm.
And she named him Seth.
Shut up. No,
after
she didn't.
Her brother. So her son was born on her brother that she shot on his birthday.
Mm-mm.
And then she named him after her brother. Yeah.
Mm.
Amy joined a writer's group since she loved to write poetry and fiction. And she eventually produced 3 dark thriller novels.
I was just about to say, I bet she had some messed up novels.
Yes, she did. But they were never published.
Oh, I was about to actually go look on my Kindle and see if I could find them.
Never published. In the writing group, she bragged, of course, about working with a literary agent to secure a book deal and that she was distantly related on her mother's side to the novelist John Irving.
Ooh.
She had little to no patience for any of the group's constructive criticism. Now, this is why you belong to a writer's group, right?
Yeah.
So you can...
For their constructive criticism, so you can learn.
Yeah.
It's what makes you better.
Yes. But she let them know that she owned a PhD and stamped with a seal of approval from Harvard.
I guess you can only make novels if you're from Harvard.
Harvard. Now, if you've been to Harvard or you're going to Harvard, just know that I'm jealous.
Yes, and don't be an Amy.
And don't be an Amy. Who needs to brag about that?
Yeah.
If you're smart, people know you're smart.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell them you're smart. One of Amy's friends, Gail Doctor, used to affectionately call her Crazy Amy because although she was warm and considerate, she was always running on high speed. When Doctor's daughter was given a cancer diagnosis, Amy sent her clips about new courses of treatment and would clutch Doctor's hands and pray with her. Although Amy was a scientist and both of her parents had their own beliefs, she discovered religion after Seth's death with an evangelical church. In one of her novels, a character wonders whether any amount of calling on the Lord Jesus will erase her sins. Another of her novels holds the central figure finding solace at the end when a friend tells her, Jesus loves you no matter what you've done.
I wonder if these were more like journals than actual stories.
It kind of sounds like it, like she was making stories of her life.
Yeah. And she'd be forgiven in all of them.
All right, Amy's going to lose her shit real quick up here. Okay.
Oh, God.
One Saturday morning, the family arrived at an IHOP in Peabody, Massachusetts. After requesting a booster seat for Seth, the waitress informed them that the last one had just been given to someone else. Well, this infuriated Amy.
Okay.
She exclaimed, "But we were here first." And then she walked directly over to the woman who was sitting with her children having breakfast and began ranting, "I am Dr. Amy Bishop. Don't you know who I am?" Of course, the woman did not. And she just stared at Amy in silence and disbelief, which only angered Amy more. So she punched the woman in the face in front of everyone, including this woman's children.
"Give me my damn booster seat."
Yes. The manager asked Amy to leave the restaurant, and Amy complied, but not before the police arrived.
Did she take the damn booster seat with her?
She did not.
A dumbass.
The woman dropped the charges, and this incident never appeared on any permanent record.
Why would you drop the charges?
In any and every episode, there is always an instance where some wild shit happens, and it's never reported to police. So,
well, she probably didn't mean to scream at me and tell me who she was and punch me in the face over a booster seat. I'm sure it was just an accident.
Right.
I'm like, "No, bitch, you're going down."
I know. It would have ended in a scuffle in my case.
Oh, yeah, and I would have called the cops. And I would have pressed charges.
Yeah, then you press charges.
And then I've been like, my kids are psychologically messed up now because of Dr. Amy.
Dr. Amy from Harvard.
And now I can't even bring him to see the dentist anymore because he goes by doctor.
God. Now what?
What am I going to do with my
life? Teeth are going to rot out of their head.
It's ridiculous.
At the time, Amy was still doing postdoctoral research. It was clear to those who knew her well that she was under a great deal of pressure to succeed in a demanding profession that was at the time unreceptive to women, while also caring for four young children. The stress of reconciling one's desire to have a family with the requirements of an elite job is in recurring themes in her novels.
I feel you, Amy.
Mm-hmm. Her having to work and all this. And
it really does sound like it's her, and she's just like changing names and locations.
People who knew that Amy was effectively the sole breadwinner, Jim never obtained an advanced degree and only worked sporadically when he had laboratory jobs that he secured through Amy's assistance.
That's because James is the house husband.
She wanted him to be the house husband, right? But in her novel, Easter in Boston, the heroine, Elizabeth, Can't be Beth.
Can't be Lizzie.
Is married to Jack. Okay? Notice she throws in a common, simple name there.
Why can't it be Jackson?
Not Jackson. So she's married to Jack, a computer programmer who can't hold a job in his field and ends up working at Radio Shack.
Where he buys ignition switches
for bombs. She describes him as ambition challenged and a flaccid bed-loving loser.
Oh, wow.
In her novel.
Do you think old James read any of her novels?
You mean Jimmy? Yeah. I'm sure he did, and he was probably like, "It's not about me. It's about the guy down the street." It's
definitely not about me.
Not about me.
I don't work at Radio Shack. I work at Circuit City, so...
Mm-hmm. But now? This was only in her novels, so to everyone else, like Amy, to all her friends and stuff, she would always tell them, like, "James is just too smart to work. He's too smart to work." Okay? Because she couldn't admit that kind of failure, I guess, for her husband or whatever.
You know what? He must be real smart because he married you not to have to work.
And this is where we're going to cut off.
You got to be kidding me.
I am not kidding you.
Oh, Kelly, I just said how much I don't like two-parters.
I know, but we got to do a two-parter.
Yeah, that's a lot about this crazy woman. Now I'm not going to be able to sleep until you tell me what this crazy bitch did.
I know. It's going to be... It's fine. It's going to be fine.
I guess I'll probably be more shocked about what she didn't do.
This is true.
Because of everything so far that she's done, it's like, God, can it get worse? Surely it can't get worse.
I bet it can. I'm, yeah.
We appreciate you listening to our podcast. If you liked it, please give us a good rating. You can listen on your favorite podcast platform with new releases every Friday. Just search for Bitch, I'm Not Well. Send us suggestions for an episode at b.tchimnotwell@gmail.com because Gmail won't let us use bitch. Or visit our website at www.bitchimnotwell.com for more podcasts and our fabulous merchandise.
We'll see you next week on another podcast about another crazy bitch who is truly unwell.